Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Yesterday, Democrats kicked off their Democratic National Convention, except this year it was not in a packed arena with delegates and cheering crowds. Instead, speakers gave their speeches over video, and the themes that emerged were clear: sober warnings of an America that, if it reelects Donald Trump, and a country that is in need of a course correction and led by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Bernie Sanders, who in 2016 delivered a more reluctant endorsement of Hillary Clinton, was clear this time in calling for his supporters to back Joe Biden.
Let me take this opportunity to say a word to the millions of people who supported my campaign this year and in 2016. My friends, thank you for your trust, your support, and the love you showed Jane, me, and our family. Together, we have moved this country in a bold new direction, showing that all of us, black and white, Latino, Native American, Asian American, gay and straight, Native born and immigrant, yearn for a nation based on the principles of justice, love, and compassion. Our campaign ended several months ago, but our movement continues and is getting stronger every day. Many of the ideas we fought for that just a few years ago were considered radical are now mainstream. But let us be clear, if Donald Trump is reelected, all the progress we have made will be in jeopardy.
Senator Sanders' speech gave way to that of former First Lady Michelle Obama, who delivered a sober message on America's future. She says America's future and the future of many American lives are at stake in this election.
Let me be as honest and clear as I possibly can. Donald Trump is the wrong president for our country. He has had more than enough time to prove that he can do the job, but he is clearly in over his head. He cannot meet this moment. He simply cannot be who we need him to be for us. It is what it is. Now, I understand that my message won't be heard by some people. We live in a nation that is deeply divided, and I am a black woman speaking at the Democratic Convention. But enough of you know me by now. You know that I tell you exactly what I'm feeling. You know I hate politics. But you also know that I care about this nation. You know how much I care about all of our children. So if you take one thing from my words tonight, it is this. If you think things cannot possibly get worse, trust me, they can and they will if we don't make a change in this election. If we have any hope of ending this chaos, we have got to vote for Joe Biden like our lives depend on it.
And so from the national level to the state level, Democrats are in the spotlight this week. Joining us now is Illinois State Senator Kimberly Lightford. She's a Democrat from Maywood, the Illinois Senate Majority Leader, and also chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. Hello, Senator Lightford. Welcome back to the 21st.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to join you, Brian.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join the conversation. Our lines are open at 800-222-9455. If you have a question for State Senate Majority Leader Kim Lightford, you can give us a call now. The number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. That's 21ST Show. So, Senator Lightford, you heard those two clips there from the speeches of Senator Bernie Sanders and former First Lady Michelle Obama last night at the virtual DNC. I'm curious what your reaction is to what they had to say.
Well, my reaction is right in alignment with their vision of moving our country forward. We do have a lot of work to do to make sure that our young people, that minority communities and other marginalized populations feel heard and empowered by Democrats. You know, there is clearly going to be a tough election. We all recognize that for so many various reasons that I don't get, but we need to make sure that everyone can find an answer for what they need during this time in our national platform. We should be getting answers, and I feel that they both clearly express clear directions and directives of where we ought to go. And lastly, I think I would say that we all have a responsibility to become active in this election so that we can ensure that we're not we're not sideliners, that we are active in removing Trump from office, and that we're setting our goals on a place where we're addressing the needs of our most vulnerable populations. And that goes beyond what we have tried to do in the past. A lot of people feel uncomfortable with rhetoric that's been stated before. We want action. We want our own party to put us as a priority. And I believe that that's some of the direction that I heard last night.
You know, I want to ask, Senator Kamala Harris has been selected as Joe Biden's running mate. And I wonder, as a Black woman legislator yourself, as chair of the Black Caucus, can you talk about what this means for Black women and women of color?
Yeah, I feel so many different ways about that, because being the first, I know what that feels like. You know, now when you say I'm the first of this or the first of that, I know that that means that you've had an incredible journey, you know, that there's been some challenges along the way. And when I learned that she was the first Black and Indian American woman to be the vice presidential candidate on this national party ticket, made me feel that that dreams do come true, that if you work hard, stay committed, lead with integrity, that you can arrive at that special place. When she was actually a candidate for president, I followed her for a while, and I learned then about her rise. And I my rise is much on a smaller scale than her rise, but I saw that she worked and built her way up to from state's attorney to attorney general to U.S. Senate, now VP candidate. And I think that everything we instill in our young people and our own children, if you go to school, you know, do your best, get a quality education, you know, you too can have the American dream. And I saw her do that from her young days on the campus of Howard University, our first historical Black university. And I just think that this is monumental. We're at a monumental moment in history, and it's calling for a Black woman to be at the forefront. And I think her perspectives as a Black woman is desperately needed to address the issues that we're facing today. And so I'm proud as the youngest Black woman ever elected here in Illinois in the Senate, and the first Black woman to serve as a Senate Majority Leader. I'm so familiar, you know, with all of the scrutiny that she's had to take on, and all of that comes with being a Black woman in leadership. So, sure. I kind of trust that that Senator Harris, as the VP candidate, I trust that she will continue to serve, you know, through her journey, through the noise, through all that, you know, she's had to endure along the way. I know that she recognizes it's a much bigger picture than, you know, those who are more desperate to remain in power. I think she's led this life, and I think she's tough, and she'd be a wonderful vice president for our country.
You know, I'm interested. You mentioned the scrutiny that she's gotten. And we asked listeners this week in our Text the 21st group about Senator Harris's being chosen as Biden's running mate and what effect she might have on the campaign and American politics. And I got to say, most of the responses were supportive, but there were some that were a little less so. Jen from Rochester responded simply with a sad face emoji. And John in Elgin said, "While it's nice that one of our four main candidates is able to speak intelligently, I don't really understand the rationale for the choice. She ran a poor campaign. Her appeal to moderates seems to overlap with Biden's, as far as the left and the right are both skeptical of her." And then he goes on to say, "As a BLM supporter, I'm insulted that the campaign may have chosen a prosecutor to represent the movement's concerns." So, Senator Lightfoot, I know that criminal justice reform issues are near and dear to your interests, as well as obviously many other things. But can you talk about, there may be some elements of the Democratic coalition that are a little skeptical of that aspect of Senator Harris's background?
Why, sure. I'd love to, because we know that we've had this gun violence epidemic. It's been on the agenda of the Black community for a very long time. And we've not done well enough in diminishing the challenges that's presented. If I could first just speak to our presidential bid. You know, I don't know, if you're not a Black woman and you're not a Black woman in politics, you may not understand the challenges that it takes to raise funds for a local level election, especially compared to a national race, right? Mm-hmm. That no matter what we do, we'll be scrutinized to a different level. So if she was soft on crime, there would be something negatively said about her. The fact that she was, this narrative of her being a former prosecutor, a cop style, now she's too hard on Black people. So she's gonna, straddle a fence that we're used to straddling. That's why I don't think it's going to be a challenge for her, because that's nothing new. The expectation for Black women is always the glass is half full or is it half empty? And so I know that, and for the Black community, you do want someone that is compassionate. And a lot of her material shared with me different nuances that she brought forth as the Attorney General to create more second chance opportunities and more programs for if you were a first offender and things of that nature. I don't think that I personally, or we as Black legislators, want a Black person that's soft on crime. We want to be protected in our communities as well. We want good public safety, but we also want all of these other systemic challenges. All of the racism that exists in government has to be fed in order for violence to be reduced. So again, do we want someone strong, but then also strong enough to say, hey, we have to create wealth in the Black community. We have to invest in our students and our educators. We have to invest in clean energy, in environmental justice. We have to make some transformative changes. We have to really take a look at how we have been doing enough to get by. We really have to look at this procurement process. We've got to look at giving Black children entrepreneurship opportunities and access to banking and affordable housing. It's so many challenges that go in there that it's so difficult to pinpoint that she's just tough on crime, but not recognize all of the other elements that play a role and how that person ended up in the system in the first place.
Yeah, and
so
this
that's
is a,
kind of my take on it.
No, that's I appreciate that, because that's a conversation we've had on this show before, that this idea that it maybe oversimplifies the message to say the Black Lives Matter movement and the Black community is concerned solely with over-policing. There's also a question of under-policing, right? That maybe mm-hmm. police are targeting the wrong crimes. They're not doing as well as they should on the violence, and instead are overworking the, small marijuana convictions or something like that. And we have a caller on the line, Dave in Peoria Heights. Welcome to the 21st. I'm wondering, what do you make of the Democratic convention so far, Dave?
So far, I think it's been going well. I think Kamala Harris is a good choice for vice presidential candidate. I'm white, but I try to support black and colored peoples. But it's good, I think, to have someone up there in the White House who has been there and who has experienced that kind of thing and knows a bit of what it's like. And I think that's critically important. And I think she can appeal to a wider group of people.
Okay. Dave, thank you for the call. Senator Leifer, we have just maybe 30 seconds before we need to take a break, or maybe even 15 seconds. I wonder, and I think Dave probably meant to say people of color there, but you know, do you see this, the broad appeal of the Biden-Harris ticket?
I do. And it's so in alignment with the whole entire Black Matters movement. I know that I've been involved with some protests, and the protest was all people from all walks of life. It was the most beautiful anything that I've ever partaken in. It was the most beautiful. I think I cried more just because I was standing with my brothers and sisters that were not Black, you know, that I was standing with people who I thought never could understand or relate to the fight that I've been in as a Black legislator in Springfield.
And right. So okay. We need to take a quick break, Senator Leifer. If you can stick with us, we're going to continue this conversation in just a moment here on the 21st. More to come. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing our week-long coverage of the Democratic National Convention, and today we're focusing on Illinois state politics. And we are having a conversation this morning with Illinois Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford. She's a Democrat from Maywood. She's also the chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. And listeners, I want to remind you, you're always welcome to join the conversation. If you have a question or comment about the Democratic National Convention or question for Senator Leifer, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21ST Show. So, Senator Leifer, I want to move on to state politics now. As the Senate Majority Leader, where do you see the Democratic Party in Illinois? What is the direction that the party should be going in? Is it on strong footing? Does it need to course correct? Obviously, there has been a number of your colleagues who have been embroiled in federal corruption investigations this year, most recently, just even last week. Take that where you will.
Well, we've had some challenges, as you all know, over the years, and we've worked on strengthening our ethics rules and guidelines, and it just seems that more activity resurfaces. But there was supposed to have been a very strong ethics package that came out of Springfield this year, this session, but it did not happen. I'm assuming that COVID caused us some challenges with releasing a package from spring session. But as far as the Democrat Party goes, Speaker Madigan has been the Speaker of the House. I've never served in the House, so I've not been directly under his leadership. So I wouldn't treat him any differently than all of the other individuals who have been, accused of, because I don't know if any of it to be true, that they all be treated the same. So we're talking about fairness. So for me, I'm troubled, you know, by the possibility that the leader of our state party and the Illinois House could have been involved in illegal activity. I just don't know that to be true. So for me, I would think that I don't want us to, you know, allow the investigation to overshadow this pivotal moment that we're in our state and our country's history. I feel that we're capable of tackling one issue, you know, more than one issue at a time. I think we can do a number of things, and, you know, restructuring our Democrat Party is definitely high on that priority list in my thoughts.
Yeah. Speaker Madigan, I think we should, as you know, we should say he has not been charged with wrongdoing. There was just, he was sort of identified as the beneficiary of a scheme that I guess may or may not have happened with his knowledge. And that's kind of the key question here. Do you think that Speaker Madigan, and again, I know you don't serve in the House, so you don't really have a say in his power there. But I mean, do you think he is a net positive or a net negative for Illinois Democrats? I mean, Democrats have had supermajorities under his leadership for at least a few sessions this decade.
Yeah, and we as a party, we've moved some agenda items, but then we've also remained in a rut as it relates to procurement for small Black businesses. The minority participation goals are never met. There's always this waiver process put in place. As legislators, we pass laws that pass both the House and Senate. The governor signs it into law, yet there's never any enforcement. I've been doing a lot of reviewing on laws that caucus members have passed. The last one I looked at was 1994, and we're still constantly amending the same law to make it do something when all it needs is enforcement. And so, you know, I've been a Democrat, you know, all my life that I know. I asked my dad at one point, why was I a Democrat, when I felt as a new senator coming to Springfield, as young as I was, there was no other progressives around at that time. So I guess I was that person. But because I stood up and questioned and fought for my community, I was labeled as the angry Black woman, instead of recognizing that these are the Democrat principles that I've been raised on, and I don't see that they're meeting the needs of the Black community. And so I think that there's a lot of work that still could be done, that has been done under the Speaker's leadership, but still needs to be done under the Speaker's leadership or any other leader for our party.
You know, I want to ask just in a couple of minutes we have remaining here, you submitted your resignation as chair shortly. I think we talked earlier this year. I think it was on May 13th. And shortly after that, you decided to resign as chair of the Black Caucus. And then later this summer, you were reinstated. What happened there? Why did you seek to step down, and why are you now continuing?
So, you know, I hope you can accept my humor, but I don't know, COVID had me all confused, right? And I was stressing out like everyone else, and I thought, I need to release some stress. I couldn't, the husband needed to stay, my child needed to stay, I didn't want to get rid of the dog, so that was the only thing that I could think of that was a stressful factor that I could let go. But in all honesty, you know, it's really a true blessing to be in the position where the work of the Black Caucus, what we're doing, we have the opportunity to change our state for generations to come. And that hit me right in the face. And I'm thinking, oh my God, it's like my entire career has come to the forefront. And there's no way that I would allow myself not to play a role in working with the caucus and getting this done, or leading the caucus and getting this done. Lucky for me, the caucus saw fit to welcome me back in the role as the leader to get these things done. And so what I've done in this short period of time, we just came off a 4-day retreat. It went very well. We had exceptional experts to advise us in our four pillars. And so we've decided that our pillars, the first one is criminal justice reform, violence reduction, and police accountability. The second is healthcare and human services. Both of those are the reasons why we're here. Not only did the George Floyd incident happen while we were in COVID, but the reveal of what we know as a Black community and as Black legislators was exposed to the whole world to see the disparities in healthcare and disparities and all of the categories where we've always been treated not quite fairly in. And so economic access, equity, and opportunity is our third pillar. And that pillar really drives home, if there's no economic stability, if you have no chance to have gainful employment, then it's very difficult to live the lifestyle or American dream. And in many cases, there's generational poverty. And they don't even know that there's a different way, because this is what I was raised in, and this is as much as my parents showed me, because this is as far as their parents were able to take them. And that becomes that vicious cycle of poverty. And then our last piece that goes with that is education and workforce development. When you're poorly educated, when most African Americans live in low-income school districts, you know, I fought for years to close the academic achievement gap, to find out ways to make sure that just because you're born poor and you live in a poor zip code, you don't deserve to receive less of a quality of an education. But this has been hundreds of years of that, and so we're unskilled. We're not outperforming or even with the pace with our white counterparts. And all of that shows up when you're trying to advance in life and become a young adult. You're at the bottom. You are the essential worker, and not the essential worker that's the doctor or the nurse, but you're the maintenance worker, and you're the cashier, and you're pushing the carts in at the grocery store in the parking lot. You know, you're not managing anything. You're not overseeing. You're not at a management level. You are the essential workers, and that has to change.
I think that's a great place to end this conversation. Illinois State Senator Kimberly Lightford is a Democrat from Maywood. She's the Senate Majority Leader, and she is the chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. Senator Lightford, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. Stay safe.